I think we had good start to the year. Strong start. 16% increase month over month in terms of rate lock volume, 36% increase year over year. We had a little bit of a rate rally, and rate term refi locks picked up 50% month over month, 400% over the same time last year. We're living in a different world than we were 12 months ago, certainly.
Welcome to Optimal Insights, your weekly source for real-time rate data and expert capital markets commentary, brought to you by Optimal Blue. Let's dive in and help you maximize your profitability this week.
Welcome to Optimal Insights. I'm your host, Jim Glennon, Senior Vice President of Hedging and Trading Operations at Optimal Blue. Our clients and industry partners have long relied on Optimal Blue for trusted insights and commentary, and these podcasts are an evolution of our commitment to keeping the industry informed. Let's dive into today's episode. Hi, welcome everybody. It is February 9th. A lot going on, a lot to talk about. And in the interest of making sure you know what to watch as an originator, a capital markets person, or just someone who's interested in the mortgage industry and some great market commentary, we will kick it off here in a little bit with a market update. We'll talk with James and Alex about everything that's been going on and keeping the market pretty volatile over the last week or so. Interest rates have been relatively steady, but we are seeing a lot of volatility in equity markets, crypto, precious metals, tech, especially on the equity side. So we'll talk a little bit about why that is. And then after the market update, we will get into the Market Advantage Report. As always, you'll be getting a preview today of the highlights of the Market Advantage Report. We'll have Mike Vogue and Brennan O'Connell on to talk through some of the highlights of it, give you a little bit of a preview on what's new in mortgage data. Before we get to any of that, just in the way of our own kind of interest rate high-level data, the OBMMI is at 6.08. That's the conventional 30-year, so stubbornly at the six handle. Like, we'd love to see a five handle at some point, and we touched on it late last year and a little bit earlier this year, but still kind of in that 6 1/8 range. But the spread between mortgages and treasuries continues to be tight. Treasuries are still at 4.22, relatively high compared to where we'd like to see it as well. But again, that spread is less than 2 points between OBMMI and the treasury, which is a good thing. Otherwise, under the spreads that we were looking at last year, especially early last year, we would have expected to be more like 6 3/8, 6 1/2 on the OBMMI with the treasury being where it is today. So good news there. But yeah, let's get into a market update here with James and Alex and pull some of these dynamics together. Okay. Welcome, Alex. James, thanks for being here on this, I don't know what they're calling it, Hangover Monday after the Super Bowl. Kind of a boring game. Hopefully you all had a decent time anyway. Let's get right into it. Definitely some things to talk about in terms of the market. It doesn't feel like there's any one single thing that's driving it right now, but there's so much going on. It feels like something's coming in terms of just a shift in the market. And it feels like it started happening last week, right? We had tech got slaughtered, right? NASDAQ got beat down. The AI heavyweights got beat down. Gold and silver, unfortunately, got beat down as well. That was kind of a popular trade there for a while. And then meanwhile, you have like a rotation into like the Dow Jones hit a new record, and value stocks like on the Russell 2000 started to perform better, which is something that's kind of been going on since late last year. Commodities in general got beat down. Crypto took a dive and is even kind of in a range now where folks are wondering what the longevity looks like for things like Bitcoin. All while we're getting increasingly interesting signals from some of the economic numbers we're seeing, especially around labor, right? Kind of, I would say, on the average, poor labor numbers last week. This week, we've got a ton of numbers coming out. So how should we be thinking about this? I think, Alex, you got some notes on this. Like, what's our focus going into this week? And you know, and of course, the Fed is in the background, too, with everyone and their brother and sister speaking this week.
Yeah, definitely. I think I'm with you. It does feel like we're waiting for a catalyst in the market. And in the meantime, especially in equities right now, it seems to be there's some rebalancing from more tech heavy and asset light industries into more asset heavy industries. We saw like consumer staples come up pretty hard last week, in addition to industrials have been doing all right as well. Kind of a maybe potentially like a Trump trade of sorts, the push for reindustrialization and such in America. Not that the numbers support that at the moment, but that does seem to be kind of the push towards more hard assets. And there's questions just around the longevity of, like you said, Bitcoin, and then also what AI is going to look like in the year to come. You know, I don't think that trade is over by any means. I mean, all the major tech companies just announced massive CapEx that blows the 2025 numbers out of the water, just like massive fiscal bullets into the economy. Yeah, it does feel like we're waiting for something to happen. On the Federal Reserve front, still expecting 2 cuts this year. But I think the biggest thing is still just questions around what Warsh is going to look like as head of the Fed and what is going to be asked of him by the economy that he'll see. I think we talked about it a lot last year, but refinancing of the U.S. debt, we're well over 100% of GDP, debt to GDP ratio now. This is, I think, going to be a perennial question on keeping financing rates low for the U.S. government. And I expect us to have more conversations around that in the pretty near future here. Just looking at short term, what was happening last week, like you said, we did see a little bit of weakness in the labor market. I think it continues to showcase the slow to hire, slow to fire that we've kind of wiggled out of the numbers. Schultz, job openings trended down to a really weak reading, 6.5 million openings in December. And that was capped off 2025 for about 1 million less job openings at the end of the year than there were at the beginning of the year. So like I said, it's just a really weak hiring environment right now. Looking towards this week, we'll get some additional numbers. We're going to get a late BLS non-farm labor report that should have been released this last Friday, but due to a government shutdown that almost no one talked about and lasted just a matter of days, it is delayed by a few days here.
All right. So yeah, starting to feel it. Interesting what you say about the just kind of shying away from the growth trade a little bit. I'm kind of stuck on that, right? And into this more value or Trump trade or the kind of old school stocks that are backed more by assets, or maybe even a recession trade, right? Or people thinking maybe recession's coming. Usually you get into, you start buying Campbell's when things start to be looking a little scary. You buy Target. I don't know. What do you think about this all, James, with the trade shifting probably temporarily, right? It's not, the AI trade's not going away, but it's slowing down right now. Folks are taking a beat.
Definitely saw this as a step back from AI. You know, not every company is as good as Optimal Blue is. We've released a couple of AI assistants. You can talk to your account managers about those if you'd like to. Not everyone has found an immediate use for these tools, right? And we've spent billions and billions of dollars in the American economy. We are building out these data centers for even more. And come Google and Anthropic and Oracle are making their yearly statements. They're saying, oh, we're going to spend even more money on this. And people are looking at this and going, those are huge CapEx expenses. These are gigantic uses of money that you can't really answer the question what for yet. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you're thinking of a stock is indicative of a company's future cash flows, if you're spending a ton of money and it might not be coming back, it's not really an optimal thing. So a lot of people definitely have been looking at this very skeptically. And as each AI company kind of came out and said, yeah, we're going to be spending even more money, I think that kind of drew people nervously away from it. Exactly as you've been saying, the jobs report came out, and it is the Challenger report. It wasn't the official BLS that comes out this week. Challenger does tend to be a little bit less conservative. They have been accused of overshooting a little bit, but that number was terrible. it did not look good for the U.S. economy. It shows a lot of weakness, and that kind of made people nervous. Would we cut rates if that's the case? If you go back to cutting rates, is inflation come back? If we're getting higher inflation and less jobs, then it's the stagflation word that we dropped earlier this year. So it was definitely a lot of nervousness. And where do you put your money? People have been kind of struggling to find, is it gold? Gold appreciated so quickly. Is it Bitcoin? Bitcoin suddenly dropping off as people aren't feeling as good. It might be a speculative asset. It kind of comes suddenly back to, well, there are a lot of companies out here that are just trending along totally fine and aren't part of this AI trade. And do have workers who are working and making money, and suddenly those large caps, small caps, because they're just not in the Magnificent Seven, suddenly those look very safe, like a lot better. And so you see the S&P and the NASDAQ kind of picking up.
Yeah, it's. I mean, to bring this back to rates too, right? Last week, we did see the yield curve steeper than it's been in many years. So that means that short-term rates did react pretty heavily to some of those bad jobs numbers and could, again, later this week when we see the actual unemployment report. But it didn't do much for long-term rates at all, right? We're still at like 6.08 on the OBMMI. The 10-year is still over 4.2. As we've been saying all along, that there's just so much debt out there and so much uncertainty that it's unlikely we're going to get much downward pressure on long-term rates. But a lot of these economic reports do seem to be pushing short-term rates lower, meaning that we think there may be, maybe the two cuts for the Fed is too low, right? Maybe we start inching towards a third cut or even a fourth cut if we see the economy continue to stumble and the jobs continue to stumble. So Wednesday's report feels like a big one potentially, as we've been lingering around the zero job build number, right? We went from hundreds of thousands of jobs being built to tens of thousands and now potentially zero or even negative, right? And then we've got inflation numbers in the same week, which is fun. I think it's kind of a busy week, right? Like how does this week lay out, Alex, in terms of the schedule? Does it really start Wednesday with the BLS number?
Yeah, Wednesday's what I'm going to keep my eyes on just from a data perspective. As we've discussed here, I think this will kind of be I'm not going to call it a tipping point, but it's going to give us it's going to be a nice cherry on top of the data that we already have. It's expected right now that this non-farm report will show somewhere in the neighborhood of 55,000 new jobs, which if you've been tracking over the last 5 years, that's a pretty weak reading in the post-COVID era. But I think that was relatively normal pre-COVID. But again, if we see a big miss to the downside, it's going to definitely highlight everything that we've talked about here. And then Friday, I think that's going to be like the second big release to keep an eye on for the week. That's your CPI number. That's got consumer price index, what you're paying at the checkout counter for your basket of goods. What I'm kind of keeping an eye on there is if we're seeing any bleed through of the higher numbers we've seen on PPI, the producer index. The November number saw a kind of a sharp jump in the goods number. And the December number showed a sharp jump in the services number. So there does seem to be pressure on both sides of the PPI inputs. And it's just, we just want to see if that's being felt by the everyday consumer. As we've talked about many a time, the consumer probably is, the average consumer is probably near a tapping out point with the way credit card balances are looking at this point.
Yeah, you and James were both commenting before we started recording about how the estimate for CPI at 2.5 seems low, especially with some of the other inputs that we've been able to see, with PPI being closer to that 3 number or a little above year over year. But could that be what you just said, right? If the consumer's reaching a tap out point, the consumer's being more careful about what they're spending money on, could it be that we're just, as we've talked about on this podcast a bunch, are we just seeing that margin continue to compress where the consumer is not willing to take on continued increases in escalation in prices, whether it's due to tariffs or anything else, but the producers are kind of having to eat it? Like, is there a little bit of a cushion there that's continuing to keep the consumer a little bit insulated from some of these price increases?
That could be a good potential argument, I'd say, for why they might be expecting this CPI number to be a little bit lower is a demand contraction for sure. Just people watching the budget, only paying for the essentials, not filling the shopping cart, so to say, when they're at the store. But that 2.5% estimate did just seem a little bit low considering the last few releases have been closer to like 2.7 on average over the last year. I'd have to pull the numbers for where we've averaged over the last year for that year over year number. It just seems like a little bit low, and that anything above that is going to scream inflation. So just not a lot of wiggle room there is all I would say. But we are expecting 2.5% year over year, 0.3% month over month.
Jim, I might push against you a little bit with the most recent consumer sentiment report came out and it was higher. So it does indicate, all of these numbers are lagging, so they would line up together. It does indicate people have actually been feeling a little bit better about their spending, not quite hitting the limit that you might think. So I'm with Alex on that that 2.5 number just, it seems optimistic to me. I'd be excited to see it, but I don't think we've seen a lot of optimistic inflation reports over the past couple of months. So I might buckle up for something a little bit higher and the markets react.
Right. Well, that's, estimates are a funny thing, right? If we were estimating 2.8 and it comes in at 2.8, it's probably fine. But because we're estimating 2.5, if it comes in at 2.8 or higher, or even 2.7, we probably get a bounce in rates. We probably get a little bit of a, I don't know, a dour review on that release. And then, yeah, also funny can be consumer sentiment type of surveys. You know, what are folks really reading and paying attention to, and how is it affecting their psyche, and hence their reporting on some of these surveys. And maybe that inflation, the new, you know, 3.0 is the new 2.0. So folks have felt good about stable inflation, at least over the past year or so. And maybe there's not, maybe everybody doesn't have a cousin or a friend who lost their job recently, so they're not kind of feeling that negativity yet. So maybe we're in another spot where we continue to spend, right? Retail sales will tell us another story. If there is some sort of demand contraction, you're going to see that in the actual spending versus, you know, trying to tease it out of people's response to a survey that says, are you going to spend more this next year? Do you feel like inflation is under control? Do you feel like the job market is healthy?
It's definitely been an interesting dichotomy. I agree. I mean, with James, the numbers don't lie on what those consumer sentiment surveys have said. They've been extremely weak. I think they bottomed out in November or so. But at the same time, I think it's, again, the story of the K-shaped economy. The economy is really being driven both at the consumer level and at the CapEx level for businesses by a select few. The rich have continued to spend when it comes to going out to restaurants, spending more at the grocery store. And the same goes for businesses. I mean, again, we're looking at hundreds of billions of dollars from 7 companies. So, you know, just a lot of parallels between the two.
And a lot of it being financed by debt, right? Reminding everybody of that. That's a good reason, again, why long-term rates don't seem to want to budge lower, is a lot of these big tech CapEx investments are being financed by hundreds of billions of dollars of debt, or soon will be. And some of that debt took a bit of a beating last week. The prices on some of the debt that's been used to finance things like AI and building server farms and power infrastructure took a pretty good hit last week. You know, corporate debt is just a funny thing that way too. Like, it's part of the reason that big corporations use debt to finance is a small chance you walk away from that debt at some point. It doesn't get paid off, right? I mean, some of it is just to take advantage of economies of scale and to spend less actual cash. But some of it is too, to, with the understanding that, you know, it may only be worth 50 or 60 or 70 cents on the dollar. Cause again, we've said there's going to be some losers in this whole tech behemoth battle. They're not all going to make it. There's not enough revenue out there in the world over the next 30 years for all of these growth stories to come true. Right. And like with any kind of boom, there's going to be, some of these companies are going to be bankrupt in the next 5 years. So you have to sort of think about it, I think, in that reality.
And that was part of the narrative for the sell everything that we saw last week, especially in the tech world, for selling, is just question marks around the private credit markets. Private credit markets have exploded since the global financial crisis, stepping into where traditional lenders used to be, but because of restrictions post-global financial crisis, haven't been able to lend to those markets. And there's just questions around the mark-to-market on a lot of the debt that's been issued by these private credit markets, just because, the regulations aren't there that they have to mark to market daily or whatever it may be. And I've definitely seen a growing number of stories surrounding in that space. So don't need to get too deep into it on this podcast, but I do think it's something interesting to keep an eye on.
Right. Well, maybe the last thing we cover, speaking of podcasts, Myron is going to be, I think maybe right now, is recording a hopefully long form podcast at the University of Boston, right? Boston University, potentially a competitor of ours, right? The Is Business Broken podcast. Yeah, that could be an interesting development. I think anytime you get a high level influential government type person on a podcast and you get them chatting a little bit, especially if they don't have the ability or the need to go back and do a bunch of editing of said podcast, could get some interesting nuggets, I think. out of this interview with Meyer, and I'm hoping to listen to that here in the next few days when it gets published.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. He's speaking Boston University this Monday, February 9th in the evening. I'd expect it to be on the Is Business Broken podcast, wherever that is distributed. I already checked it is on Spotify. If you want to take a listen to that in the coming days, definitely an interesting listen. We know he's probably one of the most interesting characters on the Federal Reserve Board right now. Everyone's wondering what he and Warsh are thinking. And in addition to that, last week, he did resign from the White House economic counselors as an advisor. So it seems he's going to be taking a more permanent role here at the Federal Reserve.
Right. And potentially one of our most dovish on the Fed, and potentially one of the more dovish voters when we get to that point later this year. So interesting. All right, listen up for that. Obviously, listen to our podcast first and then check that one out. All right, what else? Did we miss anything today? Just a lot of Fed speak, right?
So.
Look out for Fed speakers. They typically are not going to speak out of class, right? But you can get little nuggets in there here and there. Every once in a while, the market will tick or move on something that is said by anyone on the Fed, but certainly a voting member. Just a lot of that going on this week. And the BLS, which will be the unemployment report, and then the CPI report comes out following that on Friday. So a lot to chew on. Also, just the volatility in the market is something to keep an eye on with just this shift in equities. With that much cash flying around, you're going to see moves, a little bit of a move in the bond market. You're going to see crypto. You're going to see precious metals continue to shift around pretty wildly. So, yeah, keep your helmet on. All right, gentlemen. Great conversation as always. Thank you for your time. Talk again soon.
Thanks, Joe. Talk soon.
As always. Thanks, guys.
Welcome to the first 2026 Market Advantage for Optimal Blue. Brendan, I'm excited to hear what the data is telling us about January here. Do you want to kick us off?
Absolutely. I think we had a good start to the year, strong start. 16% increase month over month in terms of rate lock volume, 36% increase year over year, carried by another strong refi surge. We had a little bit of a rate rally, and rate term refi locks picked up 50% month over month, 400% over the same time last year, right? So we're living in a different world than we were 12 months ago. Certainly, in terms of refinance volumes, cash outs rose as well, ticking up 11% from December and 38% from the same time in 2025. That's weird now saying the same time in 2025, like last year. The purchase market, a little bit slower out of the gate, up month over month 3%, but down 5% year over year. I think that market, a little bit slower to react to rate rallies in general. It's a very, very cold winter weather impacted January. So I don't know if we should read too much into the purchase volume numbers. We'll see what happens in February and March. And certainly as we get into the spring buying season, I think before we need to take any real strong opinions on where 26 is going to be. In terms of rates, we dropped 7 bips on the benchmark OBMMI. So again, I mentioned this, I think probably every month, but that's the underlying value for the CME mortgage rate future product, our OBE30C benchmark index, fell from 6.14% to 6.07%. Jumbo rates dropped as well, 16 bips to about 6.25%. VA rates shaved off 7 bips to 5.64%. And FHA rates were basically flat, just a hair below 6% at 5.99%. I think most encouraging on the rate front, though, was that if you look at just the average rate lock across the Optimal Blue pricing engine, all products, all geographies, in January was below 6. And that was the first time we saw that since August of 22. So that 5 handle, a lot of psychology there. I think, we sort of as an origination community believe that this would sort of propel forward folks that maybe were feeling the lock-in effect, maybe just waiting on the sidelines to make the new home purchase or to upgrade the home. And so I think a lot of reason for optimism heading into 2026 to see that 5 handle as the average across the entire rate lock cohort that we sort of tracked through the month. And then let's see, a few other odds and ends. What was going on? VA lending picked up. So for the folks out there that are listening that might be interested in the prepay stories, we see this when there's a rally in rates. The VA refinance machine is very quick to react. And we saw that in January, VA volume overall ticked up. driven by a pickup in refinances, the VA IRL product. And I would think that that's going to lead to some prepayment pickups on the VA side, on the Ginnie Mae side here in February and into March. Good news in terms of credit across the board. Average credit scores ticked up for both cash out and rate term refis. 2 points on cash outs and 5 points on refis. Rate term refis. So pretty significant increase there. Same thing on products. Conforming FHA and VA all up. The VA was up 4 points on the credit side as well. So I think you see this dynamic. Refis pick up. The sort of more financially savvy, higher credit score borrowers jump in really quickly, and you see this sort of average tick up. And then on the affordability side, first-time home buyers ticked up, 2% for conforming loans to 45% overall. So 45% of Fannie Freddie purchases are going to first-time home buyers, which is great. And then FHA up another 1% to 70% total. So good to see that the loan production is, trending towards this first-time home buyer class, which there's been a lot of discussion around how that folks that are in that situation have sort of been priced out of the market, but good to see the pickup here. And purchase lock debt-to-income ratios dropped. So again, from an affordability perspective, seeing that mortgage payment levels relative to incomes dropping is always a good sign for borrowers, and what's good for borrowers is good for originators. How about on sort of the primary side or the origination side, Mike, what's going on in the secondary world?
Yeah, I think like the big thing for January has been a mix of maybe rosier expectation from the investor class, so the folks buying these loans from originators. So the first stat of note is our best effort mandatory spread increased. So this is the spread embedded in pricing to effectively incentivize lenders to hedge the loans themselves. We saw that best effort mandatory spread across both conventional and government 30-year both increase about 8 basis points. We did see the conforming 15-year spread decrease about 15 basis points, which is interesting. Maybe they're seeing some more exposure or more demand for ARMs that's maybe eating out of that 15-year best effort mandatory spread right now, but that's something to keep an eye on. We also saw a larger than average shift to MBS securitizations this month. We moved from 44% of our sales being MBS securitizations to 47%. And this is actually the largest amount of MBS securitizations that we've seen from a percentage standpoint since the beginning of 2024. And this was mostly at the detriment to aggregator pricing, whether it was mandatory or bulk pricing or best efforts. They both decreased about 100 basis points last month. Now, the share of loans sold at the highest price remained the same at 79%, but that second tier, so selling to the rank 2 execution, went from 11% to 13%. And this is just suggesting that the eligibility exceptions and representative delivery mixes that lenders kind of think about during the loan sale process decreased as an attention point. So folks kind of shifting a little bit more on the periphery to price and profit versus overall relationship management. Two other stats that I thought were super interesting, kind of playing this larger theme of maybe more investor demand out there right now, is we saw the average amount of investors included in a loan sale go from 12 investors to 14 investors. Now, that's super interesting. It means that, instead of showing your list of loans that are funded that you want to sell in the secondary market to 12 people, you're showing them to 14 people. That's a positive sign to the industry. That means that there's more buyers out there for agency paper. And that could lead to, more profitability, which in fact could lead to lower rates if that's sustainable and lenders can pass that on to the borrower, right? Higher price, higher profit, lower rate to the borrower. Another interesting trend on that same kind of touch point is we saw, even despite rates decreasing, we saw on average servicing rights went up about 2 basis points from a 1.14 to a 1.16 on a 25 basis point strip, so a 4.65 multiple, even though on average over the month, OBMI was down, I think Brandon quoted 7 or 8 basis points, but on average over the month, it was about 10 basis points. There's a couple things to think about here. It could be that the demand for whole loans and servicing rights are just going up from the investor class, but it also means that, hey, maybe folks are tuning those dials a little bit more on servicing. Maybe it means, you know, that people are investing in retention operations that could lead to higher pricing on servicing. And again, in all these kind of dynamics, more demand, more price increase, more value increase from an investment standpoint means that's more profitability to the lender and more like cushion for them to decrease their rate but increase their profitability. So a positive story there to tell in the secondary markets for January here to start the year.
Good stuff. Yeah, it feels like a lot of good tailwinds, maybe, firing on all cylinders right out of the gate, but a lot of reason for optimism here as we head into the late winter and in early spring.
Yeah, I think the industry needs positivity still. I still think folks would have liked to see a little bit more of a decrease going into, where we are in 2026 right now. But again, that five handle, I think, is really, really important. I think there is a psychological threshold, but you think that, if you pair in some buy downs, you pair in different types of products like ARMs, you start to get back to a point where, hey, that 5.25, that 5.5, if you buy down the rate a little bit, if you use an ARM product, that becomes way more palatable for the borrower. And I think really could unlock some things. And any of the folks still kind of waiting behind that life event dam, if you can get to that five handle, that could get folks off the sidelines. So I think it'll be interesting to watch this month to see if we can keep inching closer to that five handle.
Yeah, completely agree. Supply and demand side too, right? Because you got the buyer, but then you also have the lock-in effect. And I suppose some folks are going to look at their financing at their 2.75 rate and say, I'm going to hold on to that house even if I'm moving. But I would say for the majority of folks, they're gonna tap the equity, or they're gonna liquidate and sell that home, which will obviously open up more supply, which would be good for a lot of reasons too. So more to come next month.
Thanks, everybody. Talk to you next month.
Okay, let's close this thing out. Thank you so much, Alex and James, for talking through some market dynamics with us today. Brennan and Mike, thank you so much for the Market Advantage preview. Next week's podcast will come out on Tuesday because of the President's Day holiday, so look for that. And that's it for today. Join us next week for another episode of Optimal Insights, where we'll continue to provide you with the latest market analysis and insights to help you stay ahead. Check out our full videos on YouTube. You can also find this podcast on all major podcast platforms. Thanks again for tuning into Optimal Insights.